The station wagon was stuck in the mud, and Joe's parents were trying to fix it. This was before State Trooper Randy Sturgis showed up to rescue them. Joe was 4, and her brother Lance, still a baby. They had driven almost 2,000 miles from New York City, passed through Sioux Falls, and crossed into the grasslands, a couple of hours shy of their destination at the Crazy Eights Ranch. The highway here was newly built, and every time the sun came out, the road became a beckoning river of silver. Joe's father had been driving. He was a lawyer who still wore his hair city style, slicked back with Vitalis, and he had a dashing mustache that made a thin line over soft, ample lips. He was a confident fellow of 37, big-boned and good-looking, with a narrow face, sandy hair, eyes typically narrowed in thought, and a long, straight, aristocratic nose. His plain decency made Calvin Cusick someone you would trust, foreman of the jury, the passenger who takes charge when the subway car breaks down. He was sure of himself in a quiet way that inspired others to follow. It was early spring, 1950. The world, as Cal Cusick saw it, had lost its innocence and was facing grave dangers. Just last year, Truman announced that the Soviet Union had detonated an atomic bomb. Now, both sides had it. A believer in old-fashioned, cracker-barrel democracy, Cal was fed up with Senator Joe McCarthy running roughshod over civil rights, yet gaining in power. Unstable times called for level-headed choices, which is how the Cusicks came to leave Manhattan for the heartland of America. "I always imagined the prairie would be flat and dull," Joe's mother Betsy had said. "But this is beautiful."
"Isn't it, though?" Cal agreed. "Real live nature, the way it's supposed to be," he added in a carefree voice that made the endless days in the car sound like a song.
The trip had started on a buoyant note. When both kids had finally quieted down in the back seat, and the steel cables of the George Washington Bridge were winging by overhead, the Cusicks touched hands in the natural way of married people and, without having to say a word, affirmed their love and the rightness of their purpose, heading west in order to find a better life for their children. From the beginning, they'd been a matched pair. They were tall and physically alike. Her looks may not have been as striking as his, but she was slim and athletic. Her long legs fit his stride. She did her blonde hair in waves and had a breakout laugh. Colleen Betsy Ferguson was the one to call on a dime if you were desperate to complete a foursome. She'd show up with no complaints about it being last minute. And it wasn't because she didn't have dates. She was just that kind of friend. Calvin was a dreamer, an attorney fighting on behalf of the working man. Betsy had gone to jail in support of her union. They both dug oysters and rhythm and blues. A month after they'd met, they were practically engaged. And why not? It was wartime. Cal joined the army and became a pilot in the 82nd Airborne Division at the rank of second lieutenant. He flew a transport plane from his post in North Africa. On the home front, Betsy got a degree from the U.S. Cadet Nurse Corps and worked in a veterans hospital. They were married on a 3-day pass. When the war was over and Joe was born, they found a studio apartment on the Lower East Side, which in 1946 meant the first move toward a house in the suburbs. But the Cusicks discovered they were out of step with the flush of post-war prosperity. Rationing was over, and the thrill of making sacrifices was gone. Everyone wanted new, in a mad rush for status. Desirable apartments, the latest appliances, jazzed-up cars, and televisions for all. The streets of Greenwich Village, so romantic during their engagement, had taken on a dirty, hard, bohemian edge, overrun by society's outcasts who wallowed helplessly in booze and marijuana, and radical beatniks
who wanted to tear everything apart. Uptown, it was the opposite. To get ahead, you had to conform.